And now, it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to Noon Show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning. You're very welcome along to the 9 to Noon Show here on Highland Radio. It's Greg Hughes here with you for the next 3 hours. Caroline Orr and Shannon Wilkins on the show as well, taking your calls and WhatsApps and texts. Now, if you want a WhatsApp or text us, 08660 25000, 08660 25000. We had hundreds of texts yesterday that we didn't get through. We will try and do so today. You can also email us on, that's how you call us, 07491 25000. Phone lines still be really busy, which is great. And you can also email comments at highlandradio.com. And if you want to watch the show's pretty visual. Most of our guests, you can see them online as well, just like you might expect. Go to the YouTube app, which is good if you want to watch at home on your smart TV or your Fire Stick on Highland Radio Ireland. We're on the X platform as well. On the X platform, Donald Trump and Elon Musk have finally fallen out. I thought it would take about a month or two, but it's taken in excess of a year. Elon Musk has really attacked Donald Trump, not by name, but his big, beautiful bill, which raises America's debt ceiling to, I suppose you could say, seemingly unsustainable levels. But Elon Musk finally has turned on Donald Trump, which is kind of interesting. It's a bit of a sort of a global soap opera that I've been following overnight. Not overnight, but, you know, late last night and early this morning. But anyway, listen, we're going to focus on other stuff. Obviously, lots of bits and bobs for you, local, national, international, stuff that relates to us, and we'll have a bit of business news later and so much more besides. Wellness Wednesday as well too, so hopefully some interesting information in that. And let's look at the newspapers this morning. The Finn Valley Voice, well, they are covering the big story from yesterday. Over 170 hospital doctors and GPs across Donegal have urgently addressed a letter to the health minister expressing deep concern that their hospital is being demoted once again. The letter sent by clinicians at Letterkenny University Hospital and local general practitioners to Minister for Health Jennifer Carroll McNeill warns that plans to establish a surgical hub intended to reduce waiting times for public patients in Sligo instead of Donegal will further disadvantage residents of Donegal. And that decision is a long way down the line and it will be hard to be undone. But as we heard yesterday on the show, 170 odd GPs and more, I'm sure, who are opposed to this decision. There's unanimity amongst the elected TDs. All of them believe that this is a decision that must be reversed. And the pressure now is on Jennifer Carroll McNeill, who, just to recap, has yet to actually receive the official business plan to state that such a hub should be located in Sligo and not one in Letterkenny. So, I mean, I think it doesn't have to be an either or, it can be both, can't it? But anyway, we are back in contact with the Minister's office this morning to see if she's available for comment. Of course, she's not available as we speak. We shall see. On to the newspapers now. On to the national newspapers now. We'll go to the Irish Times. And the state's efforts to investigate the murder of Dennis Donaldson in Glenties are simply not working, and a statutory inquiry is needed, a spokesperson of family has said. The Donaldsons want a cross-border process that would identify not just who pulled the trigger, but also who may have pulled the strings, said family solicitor Enda McGarity. Donaldson was a former IRA member who worked in the Sinn Féin Stormont offices. He was shot dead in April 2006 after public disclosure in December of 2005 that had been made He was shot in 2006 after public disclosure in December 2005 that he had been an informer for 20 years for MI5 and PSNI Special Branch. Former Sinn Féin leader Gerry Adams last week won a defamation case against the BBC arising from a programme where an anonymous man was quoted as saying the IRA murdered Donaldson and the Mr Adams would have sanctioned the killing, a claim Mr Adams denied, and of course his denial was backed up by the courts. On to the Irish Daily Mail now, and a woman who spent 17 years on death row in the US before later being released has died in a house fire in County Galway. Sonny Jacobs, who was in her late 70s, died after a fire broke out at her property in Glenicmurrin, Casla, shortly after 6 a.m. yesterday. County Galway man Kevin Kelly, aged in his early 30s, also died in the blaze. He's understood to have been a carer for Ms. Jacobs. Gardaí and forensic teams are now investigating the incident. However, from initial inquiries, the fire does not seem to have been started maliciously. Now, of course, Ms. Jacobs would be familiar with Donegal. She married Peter Pringle, who was also a campaigner and also someone who served time and was exonerated. So as I say, there's a very strong angle, Donegal angle to that, but fundamentally, or first and foremost, a very sad passing for that lady and the person who was her carer. Right, on to the Irish Independent this morning. And school-aged children are now less likely to abuse cannabis. They're less likely to get drunk. They're less likely to smoke or indulge in fizzy drinks, which is great news, isn't it? But they are more prone to being mentally low and under pressure from schoolwork, according to a new report. The Health Behaviour in School Children Trends Report 1998 to 2022 provides a mixed picture of 10 to 17-year-olds who are more clean living and less susceptible to bad habits, but mentally more fragile and under stress from studies, as well as a greater risk of being bullied. I think, you know, that's probably a description of children that many people can recognise. Key trends show that smoking among 10 to 17-year-olds fell to 4.7% in 2022. That's down from 22.6% in 1998. Reports of having ever been drunk declined from 33% in 1998 to 17.8% in 22. Cannabis use in the last year dropped to 6.5% in 2022 compared with 12.3% in 1998. However, the findings also revealed that 46.3% of children report feeling low weekly or more often, double the figure from 1998. And why is that? I think it's a lot of doom scrolling. You know, I was, when I was younger, somewhat insulated, you know, from the stuff that was going on in the world. As an adult, I can choose sort of when and where I consume my news or whatever it might be. I think nowadays, young people open up the phone and they just doom scroll. Everything is negative. They're exposed to conversations about their gender, their sexuality, their mental health. They're looking at people who appear to be absolutely stunningly beautiful and ripped, but they're, you know, images of models that have been artificially sort of enhanced and what have you. And it's an awful lot of pressure. Pressure I didn't have to go through. I don't know about you. So I'd say, you know, doom scrolling and societal pressures are really adding to the mental pressures of younger people. You know, sometimes you hear people saying, oh, well, they're a bit soft, you know. But when you're exposed to all of that stuff, it's hard to be resilient in the face of it all. And I wonder maybe if we need to try and find some space for them to have a break from the pressures of the world that most of us were, as I say, somewhat insulated from when we were younger. We're not doing it purposely. It's just they have you know, they're exposed to it all. On to the Daily Star now, and Micheál Martin has welcomed news. The mum of an Irish peacekeeper killed in Lebanon has been given permission to sue the UN. Sean Rooney, 24, was killed when a convoy of Irish troops serving with the UN peacekeeping force was ambushed and fired upon on December 14th, 2022. The shooting happened near the town of Al-Abjiya in the south of Lebanon, a stronghold of Hezbollah. Private Rooney from Newtown Cunningham in Donegal was a member of the 121st Infantry Battalion of the Defence Forces. His mother, Natasha, was granted permission yesterday by the High Court in Dublin to sue the UN. The Taoiseach said Natasha Rooney has gone through a terrible trauma in respect of the murder of her son, Sean, and we await the outcome of the trial in Lebanon. We've been very unhappy at the pace in which the trial has taken place. It's been slow and we're looking for full accountability. So we'll try and get more details of the rationale behind Sean Rooney's mom taking that action and what they hope to achieve a little later on, perhaps. The Sun this morning. Police yesterday sifted through old barns as they launched a hunt for traces of Madeleine McCann. I mentioned this yesterday. This while the prime suspect confirmed plans to go into hiding on his release. A well was also dredged in a desperate search for vital DNA that could help investigators finally bring charges in the 18-year mystery. She's been missing for 18 years. Unbelievable. Just hours earlier, German paedophile Christian Bruckner piled fresh pressure on authorities by confirming he would go to ground if freed from prison. It comes amid mounting fears the 48-year-old could be released as early as September, then disappear, damaging hopes for the Madeleine case to come to court. I am sure tabs will be kept on him. I think that's a bit of dramatic reporting in terms of him going to ground and disappearing. It's very hard to disappear in this day and age. And finally, I didn't get to see this last night for reasons beyond my control. I don't know if you watched the shocking RTE documentary. It went undercover in two nursing homes and shows residents crying out for help, left in soiled clothes and being incorrectly handled. Over the past 8 weeks, the public broadcaster has been investigating care at two nursing homes run by Emmis Ireland, formerly Orpea, the largest private nursing home provider in the country. It has 27 homes here with capacity for 2,400 residents. Following concerns by whistleblowers, RTE had two undercover researchers and healthcare workers apply for and secure jobs at separate nursing homes run by the company. Researchers got extensive footage from the residents, Port Leash, County Leash, and Benavon Manor in Glasnevin, Dublin. In Port Leash, a woman was left stranded on a toilet by a new carer who had gone on her break. Harrowing footage shows the woman saying, "Don't leave me now, oh my God," as she has a broken call bell. A nurse then comes to her help as the terrified resident tells her she was ringing and ringing and ringing. Later, speaking about the carer, she says, "She never came back. I'm here on my own. It was terrible." The nurse then told her, "Don't worry," but proceeded to clean the woman's hands with her own shirt. In another instant, a man waited 25 minutes to use the bathroom as he said he was in terrible pain and very full. Consultant geriatrician Professor Ronan Collins, who took part in the documentary, said, "I don't want to be melodramatic and say that it amounts to institutional abuse of people, but clearly if people are suffering because they want to go to the toilet and they're faced with the choice of being incontinent in the chair, not being taken to the toilet due to staffing levels, that's very, very, very poor care of people." And it actually breaks my heart to think that this could be happening anywhere. It really does, but particularly to our older people in places that we trust, that we expect them to get the absolute best of care. Certainly not to be left in those situations. I don't know if you have any reaction to that programme or any experiences that you wish to speak of. Hopefully it's confined to the premises that were scrutinised. 086 60 25 000, that's the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25 000, or call us on 074 91 25 000. Now, a moderately strong 5.8 magnitude earthquake struck in Turkey on Tuesday. The temblor happened at 2:17 a.m. Eastern European time, about 3 miles south of Ikmeler or Ismeler. Turkey data from the agency shows. Rachel Akok is with us. She's in Turkey on holiday. Good morning to you, Rachel. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
I don't know if you can help me on the pronunciation of where this epicenter was. Ikmeler, is it, I wonder?
There's actually a place called Ismeler.
That's it, Ismeler.
I'm told that the actual epicenter was around 10 kilometres from Marmaris, which is a big city in the southwest of Turkey.
Right, okay. So did you feel the earthquake? What was it like?
It was most bizarre, Greg. The only way to describe it is very bizarre, because you hear about earthquakes, you never think you're actually going to feel the sensation of one. And I was lying in my bed at around 2:17 in the morning and was woken up with this sensation of the bed swaying side to side. And I had always imagined in an earthquake situation that you would be shaking up and down and vibrating, but it was actually more like a rocking sensation. And initially I thought I was having a dream, obviously. And then I realized, oh dear, there's something going on here, and opened my eyes and I could see the lampshade was swaying from side to side. And I felt like the boat, I was in a boat rocking on the sea in the bed. That's what it felt like.
And do you instantly know it's an earthquake, or do you think, or do you put it down to anything else? Just obviously it's all subjective, but I'm just wondering what goes through your mind in that moment.
It was frightening once the realization dawned on me. But as I say, you don't think you're ever going to feel what an earthquake feels like. And I've been coming to this region of Turkey for 20 to 30 years now. And I knew that there's a lot of seismic activity in this area, but I never thought I'd experience anything like that. So once my brain woke up and realized, oh dear, there's an earthquake happening, my initial thought was, oh God, how long is this going to last and how severe is it going to be? Because I was aware that this area doesn't get very severe earthquakes normally. But just very, very unusual sensation, I have to say.
And what kind of building is it that you're in, Rachel?
We're in our holiday home. Okay. My husband is actually Turkish, so we have a house here in a village, and it's not really in a tourist area. But luckily, our house is made very strongly, so there's no damage whatsoever. And I have to say, there's no major damage in the area at all. I believe there was only one fatality of a young teenager who actually panicked and jumped from a balcony. I think that was the only fatality, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, of those injured, 69 injuries, primarily all of them people jumping from buildings in panic. I suppose, you know, if they're familiar with earthquakes and the potential consequences, you don't know what's going to happen next. In that moment, it must be a terrifying moment, isn't it? Do I risk getting buried in this building, or do I risk this jump? It's an awful situation to find yourself in.
It is, but I must stress now, as I said, there hasn't been a big quake here in this region of Turkey since 1957. Mm. And that one was around 7.1 on the Richter scale. So it's not on the same scale as the tragic one that happened in the east of Turkey. They have a lot of very small quakes here that you wouldn't even feel. But there's very seldom a big one. This would be the biggest one that has happened in this region in approximately 20 years or so. Mm-hmm. And having said that, there wasn't any substantial damage, you know. Yeah. So,
is there any concern, Rachel, that this is a precursor? I don't know what the information locally is. Is this is sort of like a one and done, or could this lead to something more severe? What's the feeling on the ground?
This area runs on a fault line. So there's a fault line going from around here to Rhodes in Greece. But as I say, there's never usually a major quake in this area. And there can sometimes be little aftershocks, like waves of aftershock that come. Because when the plates shift under the sea, as they did in this instance, I believe it was about 65 kilometres below the seabed, and about 10 kilometres out to sea that this happened. So there can be small aftershocks, but nobody is very concerned in the area because they're usually smaller than the main earthquake, and because it didn't do any significant damage at all. I mean, the only risk is for people panicking, as we said, you know, somebody might panic and do something rash.
Yeah, really sad. Okay, Rachel, listen, thanks so much for the insight. Do you split your time between home and Turkey now, or?
No, I'm mainly based just outside Letterkenny, because we have the home here, we come out as much as we can, yes.
Of course, okay. Listen, thanks so much. Glad to hear you're safe. Glad to hear the population there locally is safe. Of course, our thoughts are with the young girl and her family who very sadly perished, but glad to hear that, for the most part, the population is safe. Thank you.
You're very welcome, right. Greg.
Bye-bye. Take care. That is Rachel there, who is a Letterkenny resident, but lives over in Turkey, or holidays in Turkey, with her husband, and was in her bed 2:17 a.m. when it began to shake. And interesting how she described it, sort of a left-to-right motion, like a swaying boat rather than, the up and down that you might expect. Right, now let us go to some comments, because yesterday we had Isabel in from the Donegal Hospice, of course, to help launch Jive for June. And don't forget to tune in to the David James Show Jive Time at 4 o'clock every day for your chance to hear more about the initiative, but also to get involved. I just wanted to catch up on some comments because that was just right at the end of the show. Well done to Isabel and the staff in the hospice hospice on all the good work you do, and best of luck with Jiving for June. That comes in from Breed. Another, as a family, we thought of hospice as end-of-life care, when in fact my mum went in and out a number of times before she was in need of end-of-life care. Thanks for helping us make that point, because there is that sense, and for many people that's what it is, but it's not exclusively that. Best of luck for Jive for June 25 from Orla and Mark Neely from the Tawny Tractor Run. They raised €40,000 for the hospice. Well done, guys. Massive congrats to Isabel and all the Donegal Hospice on the Jive for June. Great success, a very worthy cause, and helped so many. Best of luck this year. And indeed, you know, they're not resting on their laurels. They've raised massive amounts of money through Jive for June and want to keep that momentum going this year. But that all relies on your generosity out there. Well done, Isabel and team. Such an amazing achievement for the Donegal Hospice. Congratulations. Jacqueline and Rafo text that one in. Well done to Isabel and team. Isabel is such an inspiration of a woman and puts her heart and soul into everything she does for the Donegal Hospice and fundraising events, and has touched the heart of many family and patients within the Donegal Hospice and the local community. Lots of love, Carol and Connor McCready in Carrigans. Isabel helped me out a few years ago when she was brilliant and so easy to talk to. She is a star. That comes in from Caroline Murray in Mount Charles. What a fantastic amount raised by Isabel for hospice. Great achievement. Well done, everyone involved. That's, what was the figure? She says 2.something million raised since its inception only a few short years ago. Good luck, Isabel, and best wishes from Teresa. And last one just for now. All the best to Isabel Doherty in the Donegal Hospice with the Jive for June and the amazing amount she's raised last year from all in County Dry Cleaners. Well done, guys. Thanks very much indeed for that. Right. Hi, Greg, says the listener. I just wanted to say how the venue was picked for the Donegal versus Mayo game. Yes, this is a little bit controversial, isn't it? This game is meant to be in a neutral venue. However, we now find this is not the case, considering how close it is to Mayo. A really poor decision by GEA. This should have been fixed for Kingspan Breathney in Cavan. And it's a 4 p.m. throw-in on a Sunday as well, on a school day, potentially. It's, I mean, obviously, the throw-in time has been, I think, probably dictated to by television. You know, I presume RTE want to show that game, and they've pushed it back to 4. But dependent on where you are in Donegal, it's a very, very long journey, and fans will want to be there too, because it potentially is a really quite important game. Have you a feeling on the time of the game, its venue? Let us know. 086 60 25,000. We can't change it, but I suppose we can have our views on it. Last one, just before a break. The overspend alone on the National Children's Hospital would build 24 surgical hubs at €60 million each, which it is claimed they will cost at present. The longer this is delayed, like the defective concrete blocks issue, will mean costs will double, then treble, as seems to be the trend here in Ireland. Right, we had some communications from a listener, and I committed to get a response, and we have. Well, I haven't, Caroline did. I'm waiting on an appointment for my daughter to see a dermatologist. She's been referred to Dr. McKenna in Sligo by Letterkenny, but that was over a year ago. Is there any update on this service returning to Letterkenny? So we made this inquiry and got the following response. The model for dermatology care in the Northwest has always been a service based from Sligo, and this remains the case. There's currently one consultant dermatologist in the Northwest. There are two permanent consultant posts that funding has been approved for, and recruitment has been actively ongoing. There are currently no suitable applicants for these posts. However, we continue to make every effort to fill the positions. I wonder why. Can you imagine having two funded positions and you can't actually attract them to Letterkenny. Dermatology is a challenging speciality nationally, they say. It's one of the three priority high-volume specialities in the waiting list action plan. In order to address the waiting lists for dermatology patients, HSC West and Northwest is utilising all available outsourcing capacity via HSC funding streams, which include Dermview, Kingsbridge, Derry, Belfast, and through outsourcing to the Bond Secure Hospital in Galway. This will deliver actively for patients in their own hospital facilities where possible. Lastly, LUH, in conjunction with Access to Care, have outsourced a number of patients in 24 and 25 who've obtained funding from the NTIP and TPF to support additional in-house initiative sessions. So that doesn't really answer the question. It tells us what they're trying to do to reduce the lists, but it doesn't really directly address the concerns, other than to say there is no planned return of the service to Letterkenny, but maybe you might be contacted to say that you can get it somewhere else through the NTPF. We shall see. I'm sorry if that's not as much use as it could have been. Now, the Irish Natural Hill Farmers Association has voiced their concerns about the government's plans to purchase land for national parks, particularly regarding the potential impact on farmers. The government has indicated that it will continue to acquire land to expand national parks and support nature restoration. We're joined on the programme by Vet Dr. Gerard Rorty. Gerard, thank you very much for your time. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
What's your reaction to this ongoing initiative by the government?
I think we need a debate. I mean, I'm an environmentalist at heart and I'm also a farmer. And we have incredible assets in the country in our national parks. You know, Donegal, and I think don't think Donegal people realise how proud we should be of the national park and how incredibly well managed it is. I mean, people are very aware of Glenveagh Castle and they go down and do a wee hike around the grounds. But I mean, the vast wilderness that you have on 16,000 hectares across the centre of Donegal is absolutely fantastic. And I mean, absolute credit to National Parks and Wildlife as to how they manage it. But we need to take a wee step back and have more of a debate as to why we are changing our constitution without holding a referendum, and why the Fianna Fáil party decided to leave its core principle, which was to settle as many families on the land as possible. So we go back right back to 1935. I worked in the Rathcarn and the Gibbstown Gaeltachts in Meath 30 years ago, where there were a lot of people from Gidor who'd been brought up, along with Connemara people and Kerry people, and brought up to settle in Meath, to farm in Meath, to give a vision to De Valera's objective to have as many people on the land as possible. And we have an Article 42.5, the wording that there may be settled on the land as many families as is practical. And yet Micheál Martin in 2023 abolished that core principle of Fianna Fáil without actually saying it. I know from talking to a lot of Fianna Fáil people in Donegal, there was a lot of disquiet. We're very unhappy with them because he said, even though it will cause tension, the state should start buying land for rewilding. And I think there has to be a debate. I'm not coming down firmly one way or the other on it, but it amazes me that, you know, when we have changed the constitution on anything else, we've had a referendum, we've had a debate, we've had yes and we've had no. And, you know, there is impact. There's an impact from the point of view of what does it do to a young farmer who wants to get on the ladder and wants to start farming. I talked just this morning to one of the leading auctioneers, farm auctioneers in Donegal, who told me that for any hill farm he has for sale in Donegal, he would have maybe a dozen young girls or boys who want to start farming and sees that as a ladder and a way to actually get on the farming way of vocation or model in life, because there's so little land in Ireland sold. We have very little land mobility. The average farm in Ireland is sold once every 400 years. So I can see where Vincent Roddy and the INHA is coming from and saying, why has the government just decided without any debate at all to start spending millions and millions? I think there's a billion allocated. But more interestingly, and this goes back to the famous bicycle shed up at the Dáil and the famous wall spent for a fortune, the Department for Housing are paying roughly double the asking price for these pieces of land. So if you look at the reviews of some of the valuations for the bits that they've bought in Kerry, they've gone out and paid actually double for what the ground was marketed.
Of course, then, that's bound to have an impact then on land value, or would it only impact land value that's adjacent to national parks?
No, it has an overall impact on land value. And naturally enough, and someone like myself who's a landowner is going to be rubbing their hands and saying this is fantastic.
No, because you won't sell it.
You also look from the point of view, Greg, it's a bit like the housing crisis. If you take houses out of circulation, then there's less 2 and 3 bedrooms. So what you're doing is if you're going to take less land out of circulation, then there's going to be less land available to farm. And that is a knock-on effect. Take the sake of arguments, the guys trying to survive farming and the lagging milking cows, they need more land because of their derogation, the nitrates derogation. So they are now going to be in competition with people who are outbid for land, marginal land in the hills. So there's a debate that needs to be had as to whether or not the state should be interfering with the land market and whether we need more national parks. Now, I'm not for a moment criticising the fantastic work the NPWS does on the national parks that we have at the moment. But
is it not the case too, Jared, though, we need to establish where we're going? What is the plan? What's the impact of this in 10, 20, 30 years' time? How are we going to accommodate farmers or new farmers or aspiring farmers? Or do we have no intention? You see, the problem is people might feel we have no intention of that, that we will continue to invest in data centres, they'll continue to draw our power, we will extend, you know, Donegal into an effective entire national park, and whatever is left we'll stick solar panels on. Like, if that's the plan, let us know, let's have a chat. But, you know, what is the, what part of an overall plan is this strategy a part of?
Well, it's very obvious from Micheál Martin that Fianna Fáil have decided, well, certainly Micheál Martin has decided, and as he said, it'll cause tensions, it's going to cause controversy, but his priority is rewilding and biodiversity. His priority no longer seems to be to establish young farmers on the land. And yet the supreme irony is that by 2050, we'll have 10 billion people on the planet. And with climate change, we're going to have very little temperate zones to grow vegetation to produce animal protein. So what do I mean by that? What I mean by that is that most of Europe is burning up during the summer. They're hitting 40 degrees, and areas of France, areas of Spain, areas of the Netherlands that used to be able to graze cattle throughout the summer are having to bring their cattle in. In Italy, they're having to bring their cattle in and give them cold showers. So we're going to have the supreme irony that by 2050, we are probably going to be the most suitable place in the world to grow vegetation, to produce livestock. And then with Micheál Martin saying that, no, we want to buy all this up for a national park. Now, what I would be saying in response is that we want more national parks, but we want more national parks similar to the national park they have in Cumbria, a living, real, live one like we have around the Lake District, managed by the National Trust, where farmers continue to farm in conjunction with the National Trust, working towards biodiversity, water quality, carbon sequestration, but with the objective of keeping the people on the land. So that's the debate we have to have. Do we want, west of the O'Donnell and McCool Park, one big national park? Or do we want people continue to farm in those areas?
But also too, I think, and a note from some comments from the Fianna Fáil Minister of State at the Department of Housing, Christopher O'Sullivan, that, you know, farmers aren't getting the credit they deserve as well for, you know, the care and attention they give the land, you know, that there's so much, you know, vibrant greenery and what have you all across the country. But that's been down to farmers over generations, not a couple of NGOs that are Johnny-come-latelys that are talking about, you know, repurposing the land and to be the saviours of our environment.
Totally. And fantastic work done in the University of Aberystwyth and SRUC in Scotland have shown that the best way to manage the uplands, like Donegal, for biodiversity, is to graze them with a combination of cattle and sheep. So if you want to get the key objectives when they talk about biodiversity and water quality, it's not actually just to abandon the land. It's to actually have farmers manage it in a controlled fashion as conservation grazers. Because one of the big challenges that you have is that to obtain what, you know, Micheál Martin was talking about, rewilding and a natural succession of a woodland habitat and so on, which they are doing very successfully in Glenveagh, requires massive resources. You can't just take a bit of a chunk of the Bluestacks or Derryveas and say, well, you know, we're going to allow that ground to rewild. It's not going to rewild. And the reason it's not going to rewild is we have such a high deer population, is the deer are going to come in and they're going to graze out any sapling.
Yeah, but in fairness, in their 100-year plan, they're factoring that in. They recognise that to develop Glenveagh, they wish to, you know, they have to get rid of a lot of, you know, non-native trees. They're not naive. Like, they know.
No, I totally agree, Greg. And Glenveagh, and I'm not for a moment criticising Glenveagh. Glenveagh are developing roughly 10% of the national park with that in mind, and they have the resources to do that. But I'm just taking us back to the point that you made on the bigger debate. We're quite happy to have Glenveagh where it's at. But the big debate is, Do we? Because Micheál Martin has said that effectively he wants the west of Ireland turned into one great big national park. Do we accept that we've just abandoned a part of the constitution, which is that we should have as many families farming the land as practical? And why have we just adopted that without having a debate? Mm. You know, as I said, on all the other constitutional issues, we've had massive debates, massive discussions. Is this where we're going? Is this what's best for the environment? Is this what's best for the human population? Is this best for food production? On this particular one, it just seems to be a case of, well, there's a billion to go off and start buying land.
I think there might be some indifferences to the future of farming in this country, ladders for young farmers, et cetera, et cetera. And that's one conversation. I think everyone, though, should certainly have an interest in our food security and how independent we are. We don't know what's going to happen in this world at the moment. Look at Britain and Russia to and froing in terms of building their armies and who will or won't launch something or other on each other. You know, what about our independence? We've seen quite quickly in bad weather how quickly food can run out here, you know, and we've seen farmers having to step up in many different environments to bail us out. Like, we really need to be careful here that we are as best as possible able to, you know, feed and water ourselves. We don't know what's coming down the lines.
Well, it's more in terms of, yeah, I agree totally, but it's also in terms of using this fantastic natural resource that we have, which are the uplands of Ireland. So if you go back 200-300, if you go back pre-famine, those hills and mountains were black with cattle that were being grazed, and with transhumance and cattle being moved to bullion huts. And, you know, when we talk about, I mentioned the National Park. Well, the National Park sustained 250 people grazing black cattle before the eviction to John George of Adair. But if you take it to today's situation in Donegal, the potential of those uplands to produce protein, produce cattle and sheep is phenomenal. And it's probably underutilized. But I go back to climate change. What's coming down the line is that there are going to be less and less areas of the world able to produce the vegetation with the rainfall and with the suitable climate that we have. Now, if you take it all out to create massive tracts of national park, who in future years when we say we need that protein is going to be able to step in?
But I get you. But the reality is though, Jared, especially as we approach 2030, you know, we know we're going to miss our reduction targets by a country mile, right? And the soft target on that is going to be the farming community. You know, despite their best efforts to farm in better ways, it's not going to be cars, it's not going to be trucks, it's not going to be public transport. No one will want to talk about aeroplanes, and no one will want to talk about the massive drain on our power infrastructure by, data centres. Coming to 2030, the mood will be directed negatively towards farmers because they are the low-hanging fruit. So to try and talk of increasing our cattle numbers or grazing in our uplands, it seems fantastic. But everything that's going to come between now and 2030 is going to be an attack on farmers and what they do and how they produce food. So, in other words, we're going to be shifting, I believe, as this decade progresses, further away from where you believe we should be going.
Well, that to an extent is true. But the reality, Greg, is the uplands of Donegal are grazed. So they're either grazed by farmers grazing them with sheep and cattle, or they're grazed by red deer. The land just doesn't lie totally idle. I mean, we have a massive red deer population in Donegal. And one of the discussions that we need to have as well in terms of, you know, the proposal of the National Park and rewilding is what are we going to do about bovine TB? The deer population in Wicklow is sitting with a TB incidence of around 16%. We're very fortunate in Donegal it hasn't spread.
Can I ask you a question just in relation to that? Our policy to deal with, and you're the vet, and correct me if I'm wrong, seems to be to eliminate as much as we can of the badger population. Yet, whilst we're doing that, it doesn't seem to be, the TB seems to be in the cattle. Even so, we're killing the badgers, okay, but there still seems to be a steady level of TB in the cattle herds. Are we approaching that wrong?
Well, that's another day's debate.
Sorry about that. I thought I should ask.
A very quick summary, and I'll give you a very quick summary of bovine TB. The problem with bovine TB eradication is we are using a test that's absolutely useless. We're using a test that was pioneered over 50 years ago. where the sensitivity, what I mean is false negatives, is very poor, and the specificity is very poor. The problem with the TB test is that when a farmer has 100 cattle tested, some of the cattle that could be positive aren't positive at all. Some of the cattle that may be negative mightn't be negative at all. And we have never invested the resources to develop a test that's going to be accurate enough. So if you don't even have the confidence of the vets, and vets have no confidence in that TB test, and you certainly don't have the confidence of the farmers, forget the badgers, that's a very minor. Our main problem is that our test is totally inaccurate. Now, we could have a long-term, if we're prepared to spend a few million on developing a proper blood test, we may potentially be able to control the disease. We will never, ever, ever eradicate the disease because it's endemic in our wildlife, in our badger, and in our deer. So that's a quick summary on bovine TB. We're going nowhere bovine TB. For the optics and for the propaganda, we'll say we have an eradication program. We don't. We have a control program that's based on a test that goes any, many, many more. It might have TB, it might not have TB.
Wow. Okay. Listen, thanks for the clarity in relation to that. And it doesn't take away your wider point. And I think anyone who's got any interest in the Constitution should definitely explore what you've been talking about, how whether or not we should have a wider conversation about the future of our country and agriculture and all that type of stuff. Thanks so much for helping to spark that conversation, Dr. Gerard Rorty. Take care of yourself. Appreciate your time, as always. That is vet Dr. Gerard Rorty. Back with more after these. Cathal O'Curran is a touring musician and organiser of Skull Yivri Gwydor, and he joins us on the programme now. Thanks for joining us, Cathal. How are you keeping?
Not too bad now, Greg, and yourself?
I'm doing good. Right, okay. Everything was going smoothly after a recent trip performing in Belgium, and then it kind of went south. What happened?
Yeah, I was flying from Brussels to Dublin on a Sunday evening there, and when I arrived in Dublin, I found when my bouzouki or my instrument came out, that it was cracked at the top of the neck. Now it was in a hard case that was well padded, which and has done hundreds of flights even over the past couple of years and never had any issue. And the case itself was fine. I always open it and check the instrument just to be sure. And this time there was a crack, unfortunately. So I went and filed a damage baggage claim, as I was advised by somebody on the floor, and I was advised as well to make sure to post on social media. Sometimes it's hard to try and get compensation from the airlines and for them to take responsibility of the damage caused.
Yeah, so, because you did everything you could. It's in a very well protected case, you know, both inside and externally. I mean, what would have to have happened to this case, I wonder, if there's no denting on the case and the bazooka's, you know, protected by padding inside, what must have happened to cause this damage?
There could be, I'd say, kind of two things that could have happened. It could have happened where if after I left it, that somebody opened it on the inside and it could have dropped. Or as well, sometimes when they're throwing bags, we've all seen baggage handlers throwing bags onto airlines and how roughly sometimes that they can be thrown.
So if it was travelling at speed and an immediate stop, even with all that protection, it could expose a weakness in it. Yeah, for sure. That sounds like the most probable.
Definitely, if it was thrown with that kind of force or from a height or something that have the force, instruments are like bouzoukis and guitars are quite strong with their wood. But even with that kind of force, the whiplash of the wood will cause a crack or cause a break.
Definitely. I mean, this is an extension of you, really. Is it repairable? Because it's priceless, really. You can't replace it because it's irreplaceable. So is it repairable?
I know, and it's kind of when I started playing music professionally, it's one of the first like high quality, high end instruments that I bought. And luckily, once I arrived in Dublin, I called the maker of the instruments who made it for me, and I gave it to him. So he's looking after it at the minute, and he's going to see what he can do to repair it for me. Yeah. So
yeah, the thing is, you know, there's a number of parties in here. There's you, there's the airline. You know, the airline doesn't directly employ the baggage handlers, right? So they're not Aer Lingus staff as such. They're a, they're another company. So what has the interaction been with Aer Lingus like in terms of compensation or taking responsibility, or is it finger pointing?
So at the minute, I've actually not received anything from Aer Lingus at all. They said that there'd be an email sent out after the baggage claim. I called them again on Monday and they said, no, wait till you get your get an email, and I've still not received anything. But after posting online and knowing other musicians that have had issues like this before, I'm not saying Aer Lingus in particular, but airlines would be more inclined to direct you towards the baggage handlers. But to be honest, if you're paying an airline to transport your bag from A to B, I think the onus, even if they do employ the baggage handlers to move those bags, the onus would be upon those airlines.
And it seems to be part of the trade as well. You must be the fourth or fifth or perhaps even sixth person that's had damage to a piece of equipment or it's been lost, you know, and there's a premium. It's not, you know, this is a service that they provide. Cathal, we'll make an inquiry with Aer Lingus as well. The impact that might have is just speeding up their contact with you. Who's to say? Hopefully now it's in the hand of experts now, and if anyone can fix it and leave it as it was, it's the people who made it originally, and we hope so that you can get back enjoying it again. But Cathal, thanks for helping us get the story out there.
Thanks very much, Greg.
Okay, that's Cathal O'Corrinter, musician and organiser of Skull Yivri Gwydor. Some good news in relation to defective concrete blocks. Attic conversions and extensions for the purpose of housing older relatives could be exempt from planning before the end of the year. Habitable modular cabins in homeowners' gardens, along with the subdivision of dwellings, could also be permitted without planning permission under proposals that are currently being considered. Work on planning exemptions is now well advanced after 11 government departments, local authorities and planning bodies have given their views on the initiative. There's still a way to go, but that could be good news, and we'll find out a little later on in the show exactly how that might be good news. So stay tuned for that, and stay tuned too for the news, and we'll also bring you the obituary notices.